And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beetle for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Great Discovery by Grace Garment, is based on the book of the same name by Azriel Eisenberg and published by Abelard Schumann.
Perhaps you think there are no more great discoveries to be made on this earth, that others have done the exploring and scooped up the secrets and closed every road to adventure but the one straight up and on to the moon. Well, I have a story for you, a true one, about a treasure that was unearthed only 10 years ago. And the strange thing is, it was found by a young boy quite accidentally. His name was Muhammad. He belonged to a Bedouin tribe that traveled often between Jordan and Palestine, carrying goods to the markets of Bethlehem. The path they took went through the deserted wastelands surrounding the western shore of the Dead Sea. And often they'd stop to rest and water their livestock near the freshwater spring of Ain Feshka.
Lazy boy, why do you hide in the shadow of the tent, dreaming and useless? I thought you were watering the camels.
I finished with the camels.
Well, move quickly. One of the goats has wandered off. You must find her before we start from here.
Can I take Musa with me?
All right, but hurry.
Musa, where are you? Musa? I'm sick of these trips, back and forth, always the same. I'm sick of watering camels and hunting down goats. I wish I could do something big, something important.
It's important to find the goat, and you know it.
I want to find more than that. Musa, last night I dreamed I found a brass urn all filled with jewels and gold.
Mohammed.
But then it disappeared.
And so is the goat.
Oh, all right. Here, give me those stones by your foot.
What are you doing?
Maybe she's hiding behind that rock. If I hit her... Maybe then she'll answer.
Mohammed, you're acting wild. Now stop it.
How about down there? Are you there, goat?
What was that?
I don't know.
The goat?
No, come on. Let's go down there.
Look, Mohammed. There's an opening here. It's a cave.
Of course it's a cave. Stop whispering.
It's... very dark in there.
Yes, a perfect hiding place.
For the goat?
No, not for the goat. Come on.
Oh, Mohammed, it's hot in here. The dust is... Well, what's that? Well, what have you got there?
I don't know, but it's heavy. Help me lift it.
Why, it's a jug. Just a clay jug. The same as we used to carry water. And look, there are others here. Most of them are broken. Just a lot of old broken jugs.
Well, this one isn't broken. There's something heavy inside.
You think there's something valuable in it?
I'm certainly going to lift the lid and find out. What? Why, it's just a cloth bundle. And it's sticky. And it smells.
What's under the cloth? Is it anything?
Just these old skins sewn together and rolled up.
Oh, is that all?
We've got funny markings on them.
Where?
All over. See, the more I unroll, the more there are.
Uh-huh. Very interesting. Not exactly gold, though.
No.
Well, come on. We've wasted enough time on these old things.
Wait a minute. Sometimes old things have value. There are four of these bundles. I've heard the sheikh say the foreigners in Bethlehem will buy anything. And the older it is, the better they like it.
In Bethlehem the next day, the sheik allowed Mohammed to show his find to some merchants. One of them, a Syrian, thought the markings on the skins were an ancient form of his own language, and he decided to try and sell them to the head of the Syrian church in the city, Metropolitan Samuel. The merchant took the two boys with him to St. Mark's Monastery.
Ah, your holiness, it's very kind of you to see me. Most kind. I thought it only fair to give you the first opportunity to see these ancient manuscripts. I assure you, they
are...
What
is it you're selling?
Your holiness, these are ancient manuscripts.
Musa and Mohammed stared at the dignified metropolitan in his flowing robes and tall black hat. He took one of the skins and began to unroll it curiously. Then he did a strange thing.
Look, Mohammed, he's tearing it.
Well, he tore a little piece off. And he's putting it near the candle.
Oh, look, it's burning.
He's blown it out. Now he's holding it to his nose. He's smelling it.
A strong odor. It smells like real parchment.
Oh, it is, I assure you.
However, the writing is not Syrian. It is ancient Hebrew.
But I...
Oh, boy.
Oh.
I think he means you.
He's looking straight at you, Mohammed.
Boy.
Yes, sir?
Come forward to me. What is your name?
Mohammed.
Is it true you found these in a cave near the Dead Sea, Mohammed?
Well, yes. Our goat wandered off when we were at Ain Fesh for spring. We went into the cave looking for her, and we found these. They were wrapped in cloth and hidden in a jug.
And you knew right away they had value.
Oh, yes. Great value.
How did you know that?
Well, I saw the writing.
Yes?
I knew it must tell something important. Otherwise, why would it be hidden away like that? After all, the land around there is deserted. My whole life, I've never seen anyone there. And I'm 14 years old.
Oh?
No. I mean, yes. I mean, if someone had something valuable to hide, that would be a good place for it.
I see.
I wouldn't be surprised if the writing tells where a great treasure is buried. Maybe more than one. Several treasures.
I see. Thank you, Mohammed. Merchant.
Yes, Metropolitan.
I won't need to examine these further.
No, Metropolitan.
Just tell me the price. The price of the four.
At this point, Mohammed considered himself quite a salesman, and he left the monastery in high spirits. The fact is, one thing he'd said had impressed the Metropolitan.
It's true the area around the Dead Sea is deserted. Actually, no people have lived near Ain Feshka for almost 2,000 years. Sawney, just suppose. Suppose these scrolls date back to that period. That would make them quite a treasure.
But, Metropolitan, how can we tell? The writing is ancient Hebrew.
We'll find an expert to translate them and advise us on their worth. I don't know, Sawney. It's just a feeling I have. But something tells me they may be very valuable.
Very valuable. How the Metropolitan hoped they were. His church was poor and needed funds. But finding an expert to confirm his feeling about the scrolls wasn't easy. His contacts were limited, and the few scientists he did approach were busy elsewhere. Finally, he heard one opinion.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, Metropolitan, but these don't seem of any special value to me.
But, sir, look at the parchment. How old it is.
Oh, yes, it's old, but old documents are no novelty in this part of the world. They turn up all the time. Most of them are just copies. Later versions of the early biblical text. Now these, I'd say they go back, 300 or 400 years.
I thought they might go back 2,000 years.
Oh, come now, Metropolitan. Isn't that a little far-fetched? Why, if these documents were as old as that, you'd need a trunk to hold the money they'd bring. Yes, and quite a large trunk. Well, I'll say good day, sir.
Good day.
And good day to you.
Good day.
Almost a year passed, and still the Syrian patriarch struggled to get the scrolls properly appraised. But now it was 1948, and there were new difficulties. War had started between the Arabs and the Jews. But the Bedouin tribe to which Mohammed belonged was not involved in the conflict. They continued their way of life unchanged, traveling slowly from Jordan to Palestine and back again. Of course, the sheik hadn't forgotten the profitable sale that had come of Mohammed's wanderings. And one time, when the group again rested at Ain Feshka, he sent the boy and his friend back to the cave. The boys spent a long, hot afternoon searching there. At sunset, they started back to camp, carefully carrying three more of the large, tube-like bundles.
Do you think we'll be able to sell these as easily as we did the others?
Well, don't say we, Musa. You were there, but I did the selling.
Well, that's true, I guess. The old man was interested the minute you started to talk. How did you ever think of all that anyway, right in the spur of the moment?
Oh, it just came to me.
Do you think he'll want to buy these also?
No, of course not.
Why?
Well, don't you think he's felt cheated all these months? I told him he'd find a great treasure.
Uh-huh. I see what you mean. Well, perhaps the merchant will find someone else.
The sheik knew they wouldn't want to stay long in Bethlehem this time because of the fighting, so he sent the scrolls ahead to the merchant. When the group reached the city, Mohammed was chosen to go to the man's shop and see if they'd been sold. As he moved through the streets, Mohammed could hear gunfire off in the distance, and he glowed with a sense of his own importance and bravery.
Oh, my young friend, come in.
I've come about the scrolls. Have you found the buyer?
Yes and no.
Well, which is it?
Well, you see, I sent a fragment from one of the parchments to Hebrew University in Jerusalem. I got word back from a Professor Sukenik. He seemed very interested, said he'd come to see the scrolls, but...
But what?
The fighting on the other side of the city is getting worse. I've heard there are barbed wire barricades along the road from Jerusalem. I'm afraid he may never come. Sit down, boy. Rest before you start back.
Mohammed sat down, heavy with disappointment. He'd counted on returning proudly to the sheik with news of a sale, but now it wouldn't be that way. No one would journey through gunfire for a bunch of old animal skins with strange writing on them. It just wouldn't make sense. Mohammed sighed and thought of the trip back. Just then...
Who is it?
Sir Koenig is my name. I've come about the scrolls.
The scrolls? Oh, of course, the scrolls. Here they are. Please, feel free to examine them.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Yes. Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
As Sir Koenig studied the writing, he became so engrossed he seemed oblivious to where he was or who was with him.
You're a brave man, Professor Koenig.
What's that?
Oh, I say, traveling here must have been quite difficult.
It was quite unpleasant. But when a man's on a treasure hunt, he can stand a little discomfort. Don't you think so?
Yes, of course.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't want to sell them.
What's that?
I don't want to sell them. I found them. They're mine.
What does he mean?
Well, his sheik sent them to me to be sold. Pay no attention to him.
Now, wait a moment. Why don't you wish to have... Why don't you wish me to have them?
Because.
Well, there must be a reason. Now, please tell me. What will you do with them?
I'll keep them and learn how to read them. Then the treasure will be mine. I will hunt it down.
Oh, no. There's no treasure. Not really. That isn't what I meant.
I don't believe you. Here, give me those. They tell of gold. I know they do.
Now, stop, please.
Why else would you risk your life to come here?
You see, my boy, When you say treasure, well, there are many kinds of treasure. All my life I've studied the early writings of my own people. Now, these seem to be earlier than any I've ever seen. So, for me, that makes them treasures.
Why?
Oh, because of what they'll tell about about my people at that time. How they lived, what they thought, their beliefs, their ideas. This is a very important thing. You must believe me.
Well, here, take these back.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. Merchant.
Yes, Professor?
I'd like to take these back with me today to the university.
And so Professor Sukenik once more made his way through the war-torn area between Bethlehem and Jerusalem and brought the scrolls safely to Hebrew University. That evening, he set to work studying them. What he found was so amazing that he felt he had to talk to someone. He hurried to the home of one of his colleagues.
Well, I'll get it.
Yes?
David. David. Forgive the late hour, but...
Professor Sukenik, come in. Is there something wrong?
Wrong?
Well, you look dazed.
I do? Oh, well, I mean, something is so unbelievable that, you know, it can't be, and yet it is. Why, yes, I guess I am dazed.
Well, let's sit down. You can begin at the beginning.
A good idea. A very good idea.
Professor Sukenik explained quickly about the three scrolls, where they'd been found and how he'd obtained them. He explained that he knew from the outset that the scrolls were of archaeological interest, but that now, after his first careful examination of them, he realized that he had stumbled onto a very great discovery.
And so then, I decided to compare the writing on the scrolls with the writing on the Nash Papyrus. The Nash Papyrus. David, do you understand?
But the papyrus is the oldest known Hebrew document. It goes back to 200 BCE.
Yes.
It's unique that there's never been... Is the writing somewhat similar?
Similar? No, not similar. Identical. The formation of the letters. The spacing. I tell you, it's the same.
Same.
Exactly the same.
But that's it.
Now, David, now listen to me. I've started the translating. It's difficult. One of the scrolls is so dried out I can hardly read it. But look here. Now, here is part of what I've found so far.
Behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. But this is from Isaiah.
David, our earliest record of the book of Isaiah is from the 9th century.
But this copy goes back to the time of the Nash Papyrus, so...
So actually, it may not be a copy. It may be the book as first written down, the original manuscript. David, you realize what this means? These three scrolls may be the most important biblical find of modern times. And the wonderful thing is, we have them right here at the university, where... You know, you look disturbed. What is it?
I just remembered something. A few months ago, while you were away, one of the men in the department received a letter from the Metropolitan of the Syrian Church in Bethlehem. In the letter, he said he'd recently purchased some scrolls from Arabs, scrolls that had been found in a cave near the Dead Sea, that the writing on them was Hebrew, and he thought they might be quite ancient. He wanted one of us to come and see them, but at the time, you were away and the rest of us were quite busy, and then the war was... Well, don't you see, we let it slide by.
I see.
Professor Sukenik, suppose the Metropolitan Scrolls are part of the same find as the ones you have. Could that be possible?
It could be. Quite possible.
In that case, I don't know what to say. I really don't.
David, now, no one could have guessed what these scrolls would turn out to be. Not you or myself or anyone. Now, this is no time for regrets. We've got to move quickly. First, we must find out if the Metropolitan Scrolls really are part of the same find. If they are, well, the next thing is to raise the money to purchase them.
Raise the money to purchase them.
This soon became a pressing necessity. For when Professor Sikanik learned that the Metropolitan Scrolls were indeed part of the same find, he was determined to acquire them for Hebrew University. But he realized that the Metropolitan, who now knew the value of his scrolls, would want a large sum for them. So Koenig was aware that the meager sums he might raise personally would never be sufficient. Therefore, he decided to appeal to the Executive Council of the newly formed State of Israel for the necessary funds.
Quiet, but please, gentlemen, quiet, please, please. Professor Sikanik has told us about these Dead Sea Scrolls and why he feels we should vote him the funds to purchase the ones held by the Syrian Metropolitan. Now, I'd be interested to hear an opinion on this. Would someone like to begin?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes?
Mr. Chairman, may I say that I do not think the matter calls for debate. Even as we fight to establish our sovereignty, we must not lose sight of the history on which our claim to sovereignty rests. These Hebrew scrolls, 20 centuries old, are in a sense our charter. They bear eloquent witness to the vitality and the indestructibility of our people. And since they have emerged from the earth in the very hour of our independence, it seems not only appropriate, but imperative that we make every effort and sacrifice to keep them here in Israel, where they rightfully belong. Mr. Chairman, I move that we unanimously approve Professor Sikanik's request for funds. And I further move that we extend to him personally the gratitude and deep appreciation of the entire council.
Seconded. I second the motion.
Gentlemen, this makes me so happy. I want to say thank you.
Now, if this were a made-up story, we could have a happy ending right here. The Metropolitan Patriarch had wanted to sell his scrolls, and now Sikanik was empowered to buy them. But real-life stories don't always run so smoothly. The fact is, the two men never met. You see, once the Syrian Metropolitan learned that his scrolls really did have tremendous value, he began to worry that they might not be safe in the war-torn country. Before Professor Sikanik could contact him, the Metropolitan left Bethlehem. A short while later, Sikanik died, still dreaming of having all the scrolls together at the university. However, the professor had a son, Igael, who was a general in the Israeli army, and who was also an archaeologist. After the war, Igael prepared for publication a translation of the three scrolls his father had brought to the university. But the scrolls that were not there, the ones held by Metropolitan Samuel, these were often on his mind. Many times he thought of trying to contact the Metropolitan, but he had no idea where to begin. The whereabouts of the Syrian Patriarch and of the scrolls was unknown. Then in 1954, Yigael came to the United States on a lecture tour. Suddenly, one morning, out of the blue...
Hello?
Igael, it's Marty Jacobs. Have you seen today's edition of the Wall Street Journal?
Of the what?
The Wall Street Journal. It's on page 14.
What is?
The ad about the scrolls.
Is this a joke?
Igael, listen. Dead Sea Scrolls. Biblical manuscripts dating back to at least 200 BCE are for sale. This would make an ideal gift to an educational or religious institution by an individual or group. Write Box F206.
Write Box F206. Well, do you think that this is possible?
What else could it be?
Marty, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it.
Now, 6 years later, came the happy ending. Through an inconspicuous little box ad in a New York newspaper, the precious scrolls were finally located. Representing his government, Yigael paid the Syrian Metropolitan $250,000 for the scrolls, made possible through a gift from an American, Samuel Gottesman. Then, he arranged for their safe return to Israel.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Daniel G. Ross, president of the American Friends of the Hebrew University and a member of the board of directors of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Mr. Ross.
The program we were privileged to hear today was broadcast at the very moment of the publication of an exciting book entitled The Message of the Scrolls. Its author is General Yigael Yadin, formerly Chief of Staff of the Israeli Army and now lecturer in archaeology at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. His father, Elazar Zukanik, was professor of archaeology at the university until his death in 1953. Just 10 years ago, Professor Zukanik first recognized the antiquity and importance of the scrolls and purchased the first three for the university. General Yadin himself arranged for the purchase of the remaining four. All seven scrolls will be maintained on the campus of the Hebrew University, available for study to scholars of all nations and of all creeds. Listen to these concluding words of General Yadin for a summary of their prime significance. The Dead Sea Scrolls were written during a decisive period in the history of the Jewish people, and on the eve of the birth of Christianity. For the first time today, we have comprehensive documents which shed new and important light on the problems of biblical texts, of the Hebrew and Aramaic languages, and on the beliefs and organization of one of the most astonishing religious sects that ever existed. The tense drama of the discovery and acquisition of the scrolls is far from over. The fruits of continued research on these scrolls will long affect the entire pattern of our knowledge and thought about the books of the Bible and about the people who shaped their lives to their study. Thus, General Yadin ends his book. The Hebrew University, as the great center of archaeological research, is a source whereby the miracles of the past merge into the miracles of the present, and where the ages unite in the never-ending quest for truth. The university blends the humanities and the sciences, and thus is a vital influence for a true, just, and lasting peace in the entire Middle East. The Jewish Theological Seminary of America is presently undertaking to erect a spiritual and cultural center in Jerusalem for the advanced training of its rabbinical students and teachers, all in collaboration with the schools of the Hebrew University. In this joint striving to advance the spiritual and cultural unity between the United States and Israel, the seminary and the university merit our profound appreciation.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Our eternal light drama today, The Great Discovery, was written by Grace Garment and is based on the book of the same name by Azrael Eisenberg and published by Abelard Schumann. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. The narrator was Bert Cowlin. This is Mel Brandt. Our program was directed by George Voutsos. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.